Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Monday, Blue Shield took over California's vaccine distribution program. Blue Shield says it plans to vaccinate 4 million people a week by the end of this month. And if you'd like to sign up, the website is myturn.ca.gov, and we do have a phone number for you. That is 833-422-4255. That's 833-422-4255. And we will repeat that throughout today's show. In other vaccine news, California officials say they plan to allocate 40% of vaccine supply to the state's lowest income residents. Once the plan is rolled out, 8 million people living in about 400 low-income zip codes will get that supply. Community health clinics serving low-income communities say they just aren't getting enough doses. And KALW News reports that white residents are getting vaccines at 11 times the rate of black people and twice the rate of Latinos. Thus far, California has been allocating most of its doses to large vaccination sites like the Oakland Coliseum or San Francisco's Moscone Center, for example. According to the LA Times vaccine tracker, more than 9.3 million doses have been administered in California. That's 16.5% of the population. And then here in San Francisco, according to Data SF, 173,000 people have received their first dose. That is 23% of San Francisco residents over the age of 16. So today we're going to spend the hour talking about the vaccine because there's so much news happening. If you have any questions about the vaccine or you'd like to share an experience, what your experience has been like signing up and actually getting the vaccine, we would love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And joining us now are two reporters for the San Francisco Chronicle. Susie Nielsen is a data reporter for the Chronicle. Previously, she was a criminal justice reporter for KQED. Hi, Susie. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you. Megan Bobrowski is a Metro reporting intern for the San Francisco Chronicle, focusing on the coronavirus vaccine rollout. Megan is a senior at Scripps College in Claremont, California. Hi, Megan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me as well.
Well, it's great to have both of you. You both have been doing such important reporting. And I want to start off with you, Susie. You wrote an important piece about a week or so ago about COVID variants. There's a new dashboard tracking which COVID variants are spreading the fastest in California. Can you give us an update on that?
So California has recently identified a pair of very similar variants that have appeared to originate or at least are spreading the fastest in the state. And those variants are currently being called variants of interest because the CDC and other health experts haven't yet decided whether there's enough evidence to say that they're clearly more dangerous or more transmissible, although evidence is starting to kind of build up that they are. The other two variants that we're tracking in California right now are the UK variant and the South Africa variant, both of which have been discovered in the state. And there's evidence to support that the UK variant is spreading fairly rapidly in the state. And the UK variant is very much more transmissible than the original kind of variants that we were seeing in the beginning of the pandemic and towards the middle of the pandemic. And the worry is just that because they're more transmissible, they'll spread more easily from person to person and become the predominant variant in the state.
And this is one of the reasons why public health officials are recommending that we wear two masks when we go, for example, shopping indoors, and to be sure that the bottom mask is really tight around your nose and your mouth, right?
Right. So the two mask thing, it's great that you asked about that because I think there's some confusion around the two mask guidance that the CDC put out. And I myself had some confusion about it. So what the CDC is saying and what most health experts agree on is that basically you want two masks because each mask will do a different thing to protect you. So the bottom layer should be a surgical mask because surgical masks are made out of a fabric that repels coronavirus particles, And it also is very tightly woven, so it's harder for particles to get in. But then the top layer, which is a cloth mask, will help fit that surgical mask to your face, because a lot of surgical masks have gaps around the ears. So if you wear those two masks together, studies show that those two masks together can repel like 95% of particles from your face, and they're generally just very protective, about as protective as a standard N95.
And if anyone would like to track these variants, you can go to the California Department of Public Health. It's cdph.ca.gov, and they have all the information there about these variants. There's also some good news, Megan. You wrote a piece with Aidan Vaziri at the Chronicle called CDC Warns of National Rise in Cases, but the Bay Area is still dropping and counties are opening. And you write that after more than a month of plunging COVID cases nationally, the numbers have started to flatten and even creep back up, prompting a grim warning from U.S. public health leaders to remain cautious in the next few weeks. You wrote this on February 26th. But as you report, the situation was a bit brighter in California and the Bay Area, where cases and hospitalizations continue to fall, and counties are actually easing public health restrictions. Tell us what you found. Megan, are you there? Oh, Megan, did we drop you? I think we dropped Megan.
Oh, I think she's muted.
Oh, Megan, are you there? Are you muted? All right. Well, hopefully we'll figure that out. Susie, can you give us any information about that? I mean, this is good news. We still have to be very, very vigilant, but it's great to hear that the cases are actually dropping in the Bay Area and some counties around the state.
Hi. Sorry. I'm back on. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay. Go ahead, Megan.
Yeah. So what it's looking like, so like basically, as you're saying, cases are sort of not decreasing as much anymore nationally. And I think that's giving, you know, public health officials some pause. But like locally, like California and specifically in the Bay Area, cases are about, and in San Francisco, Napa, and Santa Clara counties, cases have dropped 83% from their peaks in late December. So we're actually seeing, you know, I think just with more people getting vaccinated and, you know, we're a bit removed now from some of the winter holidays. So I think people, you know, we're starting to see cases go down. And a lot of experts I've talked to are pretty optimistic about what this means for California and the Bay Area.
That percentage drop is huge. Can you also just comment on what we're seeing in terms of counties opening up? You report that indoor dining has resumed in San Mateo and Marin counties. San Francisco and Santa Clara officials announced just recently that they are opening more, and we have details about what's going on in San Francisco. They moved to the red tier yesterday. That means indoor dining and movie theaters can reopen at 25% capacity or up to 100 people. Gyms, dance, and yoga studios can open at 10% capacity. And then museums can open at 25% capacity. What do public health officials say about the decision to start opening, Megan?
Yeah, so I think some public health officials, they're like very optimistic about it. I know Mayor London Breed was saying, you know, this is great. We want you to sort of, you know, have a sort of staycation and maybe be able to do a few more things now, but you should still obviously be wearing your masks and still getting vaccinated and, you know, still taking the precautions that we need to end the pandemic. But, you know, maybe you can start to do a few more things now.
UCSF Dr. Peter Chin Hong, who's been on this show before, says he's actually worried about reopening. He said, "We've seen this story over and over again in the Bay Area. We have a honeymoon period of 5 to 6 weeks when everything opens back up, and then we have another surge." What are your thoughts on that, Susie? What have you heard from public health officials on this? It's such a tough one because businesses, they're so desperate for customers. I mean, people are just suffering. People need a paycheck. People need to ensure that their business doesn't close. And sole proprietors, we know that a lot of people have their own independent businesses. So this is just such a tough one.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I've heard kind of conflicting things from public health experts in terms of actual reopening timelines. Just as you see there's this sort of divide on reopening schools and other kinds of facets of society. I do know most public health experts are pretty solid on the fact that indoor dining is probably not something that most people should be doing right now, especially because, you know, in the Bay Area, we usually have such great weather. It's pretty easy to dine outdoors. So generally, I think most experts would recommend that you don't do things like that. In terms of general reopening, I think as long as Bay Area residents stay compliant with mask wearing and are generally following public health guidance in terms of social distancing, I don't know whether the actual reopening itself of, you know, outdoor dining and museums when you're at a distance and things like that is going to substantially drive cases up. But we have, I mean, I'm sure that you've seen this, like I will go out on a walk. I live in Oakland and, you know, I'll go and find big groups of people picnicking outside and they're not wearing masks, or, you know, sometimes you'll go inside and you'll see people not necessarily following those things. So I think it's hard to tell what will happen. And I think as more people get vaccinated, we have pretty high vaccination rates in the Bay Area, so that will also help. I don't think we'll see the same kind of surge that we saw in the winter for sure, but we may see cases go up again in the next month or so.
Sue writes, I've been concerned throughout the pandemic that every time cases go down, we open things back up and then we see a surge of cases. I get the economic concerns, of course, but this seems foolhardy to me. Why can't localities wait until there are far fewer or no cases before opening up businesses again? Well, thanks for that email, Sue. You know, that's the tough one. It's just such a hard one. And then you don't want to see cases go back up, like UCSF Dr. Peter Ching Hong said. Well, today we are talking about the vaccine, about all of the news. There's so much going on right now with cities that are opening, information about Blue Shield taking over the state's vaccine distribution program. And we're talking about it with Susie Nielsen, a data reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle, and Megan Bobrowski, Metro reporting intern with the Chronicle. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's hear from Michaela in San Francisco. Hi, Michaela. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for doing this program. I'm so pleased. I have two friends. One's 94, the other's 83. They live in a so-called independent facility and are alone and can't travel to the vaccine site. How can I help them get vaccinated? They have serious health issues. Thank
you very much. I'm so glad you brought this up. Thank you so much. Susie, do you know of any mobile vaccine-type clinic that is actually going to where people are for those who cannot go to a vaccine site?
You know, that's a great question. I do believe that San Francisco is offering some mobile clinics, but that would be something to do some research on. I would have to get back to you on that. But I do know that multiple counties are doing that.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, Michaela, because I just read on Twitter, someone was saying about what's going on in Texas. If you know of anyone stuck at home or for whom mobility is an issue, tell them or their caregiver to contact a certain site and we'll send someone out to vaccinate them. And it just makes so much sense because so many people cannot go to sites. And so over the course of the show, we will do some research and see if we can find information about a mobile clinic that actually goes to where people live. So thank you so much for that. And actually, we're going to be joined again at 10:40 by Anna Maria Barry Jester, who's with Kaiser Health News, and she might have an answer for you. So I just got your email, and if we do have an answer, we find one, hopefully we will. I will definitely email you back. So thank you for that important question. Let's go next to Brad in San Francisco. Hi, Brad. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Rose. I appreciate it. I have something I think is vitally important to the community to add. Governor Newsom changed the status of postal workers, specifically letter carriers, from B to Tier 1 to C Tier 1. And the reason I have a major issue with that, and please let me disclaim that I am a union representative for letter carriers, but this is not about that. They're the only workforce, the only population that goes to every house, every address, work or personal, every day, 6 days a week. 7 days they still deliver packages. What I'm saying is that they have the potential to spread that virus, a very virulent strain in the Bay Area, to lower them from the national status, from Biden, from B1 to 1C, it just boggles my mind. So I'm trying to find out, A, why they did it, and B, of course, I'm encouraging people to write in. Because I emphasize again, if that carrier takes back, comes into that station and gives it to their fellows, there's a small argument of, well, it doesn't last long on these surfaces. You have to lift your mask to cough, your super, you put it on that male, and then a lot of people come down at a specific time thinking, well, I'm counting on this person to appear at that time. So there's so many multiple ways for them to spread it versus any other profession, because there is no other occupation, there is no other entity that visits every single address, every home, every business, every day.
Brad, you make a great point. And do you have any idea, does this apply also to UPS, at FedEx, and Amazon delivery drivers? Because they are also out all day delivering packages. And, you know,
they still go. I don't want to be absolutely certain, but I believe they are still B tier one under transportation and logistics on my turn. But they still don't have the same routine. A FedEx driver will go to a certain number of addresses, in a grocery store. You'll see a certain number of population, fairly large, right. No question, but nowhere near I can't repeat that often enough. Every single address, every single individual, potentially, they have touch with.
And it's amazing because mail never stopped. I mean, the amazing mail deliverers have been working throughout this entire pandemic. Susie or Megan, do you have any information about that? Sounds like you don't. And that's fine if you don't, because we don't have answers to all of these questions for sure. If needed, we'll look it up.
Believe it or not, no one else has given me an answer either. I guess gets silence. I'm not. This is not a personal.
Hey, Brad, would you please email me so we can get the information on an email, and then we can ask Anna Maria Berry Jester if she can look into it, and then we'll also look into it. And every Thursday we're doing this show or segment, and so if we have an answer, we'll bring it to you by the end of the day, end of the show. If not, maybe tomorrow or the next week.
I will do that long as you allow me to end my call with thank you for everything you do. I've been saying this to you for years, and if I agree with you or disagree with you, I will listen to you, because there's always something you add to the conversation and the overall well-being of this community that you serve.
I greatly appreciate that, Brad. Thank you so much. And we will do whatever we can to find you an answer. It's your call at kalw.org. Did you want to jump in there, Susie or Megan?
I was just going to say, again, this is a great question. And I think the state guidance on who can get vaccinated has been, it's been evolving and changing. And this is definitely something I think we need to look into. But I guess saying that, it's been kind of constantly shifting.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, thank you again. And we will do whatever we can to try to find an answer. Let's go next to Scott in San Francisco. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I appreciate the city's efforts in getting this thing going. I got my two vaccines at San Francisco General. I got the Pfizer, and I take care of two disabled guys who get their Moderna vaccines over at the Southeast Health Clinic in San Francisco. And I know they're really busy over there, and the line is around the block, and I took one of them in today, but it's a little frustrating when at the end of when they give the vaccine that they hand my disabled guys a 22-page handout about the vaccine provider's protocol about what they should be doing and how the vaccine should be stored. And I'm just thinking to myself, the competency level of somebody over there is in need of adjustment. Because not only can't they read it, it's not relevant to them. And why do that?
Well,
otherwise, yeah, I'm delighted.
Well, that's great. Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Yeah, not sure why they do that, but thank you for calling in, and thanks for what you're doing for your two friends. We've got a number of emails. John writes, the vaccine rollout has been criminally incompetent, seems to me. State, county, and local departments of health had months to prepare. They didn't know the specifics of the vaccine, but they could have planned distribution based on past pandemics. They blame Trump, but they made inadequate plans. What are your thoughts about this, Susie? What are health clinics and advocates, especially for the most vulnerable, telling you right now about the overall rollout?
So that's a great question. I think the answer is just it's just very multi-pronged. There are a lot of things I think that are going right. And I think there are also a lot of things that are going wrong. So we recently reported on, for example, what San Francisco neighborhoods and what ethnic groups in San Francisco were getting vaccines. And it looks like actually San Francisco, I know that KLW did some reporting on ethnicity for vaccinations, but it looks like San Francisco has not actually been disproportionately allocating doses to white folks. So that's good. I think California's recent decision to allocate 40% of doses to these vulnerable zip codes is a really great decision. But one thing that Megan and I have been thinking about a lot and reporting about a lot is that the state and really the counties are, and most providers are largely relying on an honor system to verify eligibility. So people who go into a clinic don't necessarily have to provide credentials that show that they're eligible. And I think that's kind of led to a lot of frustration among both providers and residents. We've gotten a ton of emails from San Franciscans and other Bay Area residents who are frustrated that, you know, their 20-year-old neighbor has gotten a vaccination while they haven't yet. And I do think that there has been a problem in that that level of the kind of verifying eligibility. I do think also, you know, the shortages have been a problem, although that's not necessarily a California-centric problem. It feels like more of a just supply shortage issue. Those are some initial thoughts. I could go on forever.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I've heard about people who are lying about their profession and they're not asked of proof. This is actually, it's not speculation. I know that this has happened. Megan, you wrote about how some vaccination sites, including the Oakland Coliseum, are not checking for proof of eligibility, and a lot of people are jumping the line. I mean, how common is this? Are we talking about massive numbers here? And is there any way to know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I've been trying to look into this as well, and it's not really clear how widespread this is, just because, you know, they're not tracking, you know, exactly for this issue. You know, they're not sure who's actually eligible and who's not, who's going. I mean, the state has previously said that the site, the Coliseum site, is working largely as it was intended to, but obviously we know that about a week or so ago, there were some vaccine codes that were meant for underserved communities to help them make appointments and come get vaccinated. And somehow those codes were getting sent around communities with the message that there were doses expiring at the Coliseum and anyone can come sign up and get a vaccine. And so a lot of people who were not really eligible or, you know, had no, like, urgent reason to get a vaccine at this point, went ahead, used this code, signed up, and got their vaccine because they thought they were, you know, helping out by using a vaccine that was otherwise going to go to waste. And it turns out these codes were not meant for them. They were meant for underserved communities, and those underserved communities didn't get access to them. So that's something that the state has said they're going to move away from group codes and start giving individual codes. But we're still seeing, you know, teachers are getting group codes. So it's a little unclear on what exactly is going on with that.
What do we know about frontline workers at this point? Food workers, grocery store workers, educators. Susie, do we have data showing us how many people, what percentage of those frontline workers have been vaccinated so far?
That's a great question. I believe some counties are tracking that. Or I know that counties require people to state their occupations. And so presumably the counties would have data sets to that effect showing what percentage of each type of worker had been vaccinated. I also know that there are individual efforts, like in Contra Costa County, that county's health equity officers are actually going into farm worker communities and trying to get farm workers vaccinated because they're at risk as a population. But I'm not sure specifically, I have not looked into what percentage of each occupation and what kinds of frontline workers have gotten the vaccine in each county. That's a great question for a story that we could do.
Yeah, it would be interesting to learn that. We do know from data at covid19.ca.gov that just 16% of vaccines in California have been given to Latino residents, even though they make up 40% of the state's population. Black and Latino Californians have the highest rate of COVID deaths in the state. I'd love to know that if they're keeping track of Pacific Islanders and Native populations, because they're usually left out of these studies, even though I'm sure that their percentages are also high. CalMatters actually had a really interesting piece about how Native people who are dying from COVID in California are not being, their death certificate is not saying Native, and so they're concerned that they're not being counted.
Yeah, and that's actually been a problem with the vaccination data as well. We've been trying to report on what demographics have received vaccines. And, you know, when you get down to populations with smaller percentages, I mean, basically beyond Asian, Latino, and white in California, any other racial group, including Black folks, it's a lot of, because the ethnicity data is self-reported, it looks a little different from the data that the census has on populations. So it's really hard to compare. And so we actually don't get a great picture on the county level of ethnicity data and who's getting vaccines. And there could actually be way bigger disparities than what we're seeing on the data level just because of those different types of reporting.
I also wanted to ask you, Susie, you wrote a piece with your colleague Kelly Huang about how California's COVID numbers compare to Texas, which is lifting its mask mandate. So many people were shocked to hear this.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of frustrating, especially because, you know, we're just a few weeks away from this huge winter storm that battered Texas. And we wrote about, actually, at the Chronicle, we wrote about back then how Texas's reliance on its own energy grid and this sort of, I think there's kind of a political attitude in Texas that's very different from California. It's very kind of conservative, but also kind of libertarian, state self-determination. And I think Governor Greg Abbott, when he lifted the mask mandate, said something like, you know, Texans don't need the government to tell them how to be safe. They can practice individual responsibility. But, you know, you see that when you lift a mask mandate, people are less likely to wear masks. And I think individual Texans, many individual Texans will continue to wear masks. And I've seen a lot of actually companies are still requiring Texans to wear masks inside. But the idea that, you know, lifting a mask mandate when your case numbers are increasing, when your hospitalization rates are high, I mean, Texas, our piece talked about how Texas was scoring worse than California on every metric. It's administered fewer vaccines, its case rates are higher, its hospitalization rates are higher, and they're the ones getting rid of the mask mandate. But I think, you know, Texas and California are just very different politically, and their leadership is very different.
Well, I was really upset by this yesterday because I've been talking about this on the show, that my cousin sadly died from COVID two Sundays ago, and she was at a church service. She was with her church group for the last month and a half, so we're almost certain she got it with her church. No masks at all. And I saw videos of people actually coughing and sneezing, no masks anywhere. And yes, she made a decision to go to that church and not wear a mask. And this was in Arizona. But I keep wondering to myself, what if those officials had said masks are mandated and churches cannot be open? I mean, we'll never know, unfortunately. But I know that our listeners take this seriously, but we all have maybe family members, friends, people we know who might not, who might still be going to states where there's no mask mandate, or even in California, and they're not taking it seriously. So I just want to play a clip. This was really an amazing New York Times op-ed from opinion video producer Alexander Stockton. He actually spent time in an ICU in Phoenix, which is where my cousin spent 2 weeks, 1 week in the ICU. And he spent time talking to nurses about what they are seeing at that Phoenix hospital. And here is that clip.
Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has advocated for personal responsibility over mask mandates, even though he's been photographed maskless at a gathering and his son posted a video of a crowded dance party.
Even on the outside, they go, I don't care. I'm not wearing a mask. I'm not getting the vaccine. That's bullshit. The second they come into the hospital, they want to be saved. Never do they say, I made the decision. I'm accepting this. Don't do anything, doctor.
Half a million people in this country have died from COVID. Many have been in ICUs, with nurses, not family members, holding patients' hands.
I always wonder, are they still going to be there when I get to work? It's on my mind when I get home. Are they going to make it through the night? There's one that I can think of right now.
One patient in his late 50s was so critical that he required constant supervision. Each of his breaths looked painful.
There was one day that he was looking a little bit better, and so he was able to shake his head and smile, and we set up a video call for him, and it was just the sweetest thing ever. I could hear his little grandson. He was probably like 4 years old or so, and I saw him on the screen too, and he was just jumping up and down, so excited. You're doing it, Grandpa. You're doing it. We love you. Look at you. You're getting better. It just broke my heart. It broke my heart. He's one that I don't think is going to be there when I get back on Sunday.
But I'd already been told something Sarah hadn't. The patient's family had decided to take him off life support.
Okay.
Yesterday
they did. And I just think of his little grandson. You're doing it, Grandpa. You're doing it.
He wasn't the only patient who didn't make it. When I went back to the hospital, I noticed that the bed of the patient I'd seen get flipped over was empty. My heart sank. I knew this meant she'd passed away.
What's sad is when I go back, those beds will be full. They'll have somebody else there, just as sick, with another long stretch of a few weeks ahead of them before it's time for their family to make that decision.
I'd never before seen someone die. And even though I didn't know these people, witnessing their deaths left me sleepless, exhausted, and depressed. It's unfathomable to me that these nurses have gone through that every single week, sometimes every single day, for an entire year. I assumed the nurses must block out all the deaths to be able to keep going. But they don't. They grieve every single one.
And huge thanks to nurses and all frontline workers and hospitals. And thanks to opinion video producer Alexander Stockton with the New York Times, who spent several days reporting at the Valleywise Medical Center in Phoenix. Two ICU nurses wore cameras to show what it's like to care for the sickest COVID patients. And you can see the entire video. It's really heartbreaking at yourcallradio.org. And sadly, it has taken about a week and a half to actually transfer my cousin's body home because there's such a backlog. Hospitals, mortuaries, they just can't keep up because so many people are dying. Susie, I just wanted to play that clip because given that Texas and Mississippi and other states are getting rid of their mask mandate, we need to just remind people that we have to still take this so, so seriously.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I actually, I've been talking to my parents about this a lot because they are hopefully going to get their vaccines in a few months, but they are not currently eligible. And they've actually doubled down on their restrictions because they're like, you know, we're so close to the end of this. If we all get vaccinated, then, you know, people will be able to mingle again and life will return to some semblance of normal in a matter of months. And why stop now? You know, why stop when you're so close to the finish line on this?
Right. Megan, what would you add?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, there's definitely some public health experts that are, you know, sort of anti-reopening and, you know, think we should wait a little bit longer. Like back when San Francisco and Santa Clara counties reopened last time, they waited a month until after the state guidelines said they could open. And I think some people are sort of questioning, you know, why aren't they doing that again? Why are they, you know, the state says, okay, why are they doing it immediately instead of waiting again? And I think that's a question that the counties will have to answer.
Hmm. Megan Bobrovsky is a Metro reporting intern for the San Francisco Chronicle, focusing on the COVID vaccine rollout. Susie Nielsen is a data reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Thank you both for your important reporting, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thank you. Coming up after a short break, we'll be joined by Anna Maria Berry-Jester, senior correspondent with Kaiser Health News, and we will take your questions about the vaccine rollout. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. Now we are joined once again by Anna Maria Berry-Jester, senior correspondent with Kaiser Health News and California Healthline. Hi, Anna Maria. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. How are you doing?
Oh, hanging in there. I'm just hoping that everybody still takes this seriously. I'd love to get your thoughts. I mean, I was just kind of angry and just saddened when I saw the announcements coming out of Texas and Mississippi. I'm really thinking about frontline workers. Imagine a waitress who's in a restaurant with a table of drunk people with no masks who start coughing. I mean, what's she supposed to do? She doesn't have many options.
Yeah, it's such a tricky situation. You know, the CDC has been very clear that they think it's too early to broadly open things up. A lot of the governors in these states say that they are still encouraging people to take those steps, but that the difference is having a government mandate to do it. I think we've seen that a clear message, which sometimes is done through policy, is really helpful for help, you know, for people understanding why masks and these kinds of things are important.
Right. Well, there's a good interview this morning with the CDC director, Dr. Walensky. I believe it was this morning's Morning Edition, and she talks all about this if you'd like to check it out. We have a number of emails already coming in, Anna Maria, but I first want to ask you about the announcement we got on Monday. Blue Shield is taking over California's vaccine distribution program. What will actually change for people who need vaccines?
Right. So there's been a couple of changes this week that are kind of big, but a lot of it's going to happen in the background. So, and you know, from where we're all sitting, we might not see it exactly. But the big change here is that right now the vaccine goes to counties and to some of the big healthcare providers. What's happening is it's switching over so that Blue Shield will be doling out the vaccines, sending out the allocations, and responsible for that, and building up a network of providers who are going to be giving out the vaccines in communities. They've said that those networks will largely mirror what the counties have already built. So the same providers giving vaccines out will more or less be giving out vaccines in the future. But they've provided very little detail on that so far. And so I think there's a lot of questions about who will have the vaccine to give out once it's rolled over to Blue Shield. That hasn't exactly happened yet. That contract is in place. It's supposed to roll out in stages. So first in the San Joaquin Valley, and then in Southern California, and Northern California in the Bay Area are third. But it hasn't really even taken hold in the first area yet. So at this point, the vaccines are still going the way they always have been, which is from the federal government to the counties and the healthcare providers.
And the sign-up site is myturn.ca.gov. And if you'd like to call, the number is 833-422-4255. That's 833-422-4255. Anna Maria, we had an important question from Michaela earlier in the show, and I'm so glad she brought this up. Michaela says that she has two older friends who cannot go to a vaccine site, that they are living in an independent living facility and they cannot go to a site. Both are frail. One cannot walk, the other needs oxygen and more. Are there mobile clinics to go to where people are?
Yes. So Contra Costa definitely has mobile clinics, and more counties in place and providers are looking at this as an option. I think that there is broad understanding that some of the people who most need to get vaccinated are not getting vaccinated because our system is not serving them. So it is really tricky, though, if you are somebody who needs somebody to come to you to get vaccinated. That is happening, but it's not sort of broad, widespread. And just, this is related, but your point about with MyTurn and the phone number, that is rolling out across the state right now, but most appointments that are available for getting a vaccine are not actually linked to MyTurn. So in the Bay Area, MyTurn, the phone number can only get you appointments at the Moscone Center and the Coliseum. That will change, and it will be easier to use MyTurn and the phone number that goes with it to set up appointments and find ways that you can get vaccinated that will work for you going forward. But that is not the case yet, unfortunately.
Anna Maria, I want to ask you a question for people who are getting frustrated at this point. You know, in a state like California that so proudly talks about the fact that we have the largest tech companies in the world in this state. I mean, the fact that we were talking before COVID about driverless cars, and yet we can't figure this out. It's taking this long. I mean, I know we're going to do, there's probably going to be so many pieces after the fact about what could have been better. But why is it taking so long to just streamline the system and get answers to these very basic, important questions?
I think it's such a good point, Rose. And I will say that this is exactly what I said to the people at the California Department of Public Health yesterday, that, you know, the state of our data infrastructure and all of this is just, it is really not where it should be. And we are building the plane as we fly it, so to speak, which is really a problem. I mean, every week we talk, there's sort of a new plan with the vaccine rollout. It wasn't built in advance. So it's happening right now and changing constantly, which I think is very confusing for the general public. But you're right, there's a lot to look back and understand where this went so wrong. And right. But you know, we are where we are now, I'm hoping that there's gonna be some improvements in the weeks to come on how people can get signed up. But I think that frustration is very much warranted.
And we have an email from Cindy, and I hope you don't mind me, Cindy, saying that you are the general manager at the pizza place on Noriega in San Francisco. I am going to support you, and I hope others will too. In fact, I want to do a show so we can all just talk about the businesses, the local businesses that are so important to support. Cindy writes, "We're in the restaurant industry and got the alert on Wednesday that our tier was up for the vaccine. We tried connecting to the site. We signed up that same day with SFGov. No luck. The next day we got diverted to MyTurn. I was able to get myself, husband, and 7 of our staff appointments. The following day, I tried to make appointments for other staff. No luck." And she just talks about how she had to go through the system. She says she's grateful for those that did get the vaccine. They booked at CCSF, SFSU, and Moscone, but kept getting directed to the Oakland Coliseum. So that is where they went, and they had a good experience there. Cindy also says that they are not reopening for indoor dining at this time because they think it's too soon. We are struggling financially, but we would rather be safe than sorry. Well, thank you so much, Cindy. That actually just gives me the chills because I know how much people are struggling. And again, Cindy is the GM at the pizza place on Noriega. I might order some pizza tonight. I hope others will too. You know, it's such a tough one. Anna Maria, Cindy's talking about how she just got thrown to different sites and the whole thing was just kind of confusing.
Yeah. And so I've thought a lot about this since we've talked, you know, when we've been talking every week. So I called San Francisco yesterday and I explained that the MyTurn number is the most prominent phone number you can get. And it really only goes to Moscone and the Coliseum. And also, as you're saying, a lot of these systems benefit people who have more flexibility in their schedules and kind of can pick up and go somewhere far away or take an appointment at any time that's given to them. And that's not the reality for a lot of people. What they told me is that we should stay tuned for news. They're going to have a phone number that will be much more helpful in the future. But at the moment, you can actually call 311 and get some help, they say, in getting a vaccine appointment.
Okay, 311, and you will get help with a vaccine appointment. And as I said last week, we had an amazing librarian email us and say, if you have any questions about phone numbers, addresses, where to go, call your local librarian. Thank you again for the email, Cindy, and we will definitely do a show soon. Just open the lines and talk about the businesses that we all should be supporting right now because they're suffering so much. We have an email from Carol. I'm one of the many whose second vaccine at Sutter was postponed. There seems to be no one to ask at Sutter regarding why they were giving first dose vaccines to a larger group of people without having enough to finish doses for those of us who are 80 or over. I'm wondering what we do if they don't get enough within the 6-week recommended time frame for the Moderna vaccine.
It's a great question. I do have some information about that. So, you know, Sutter says that they, like the rest of the providers in the state, were told to not hold back second doses, to give all the first doses, and that they would be given second doses to go along with those. And now they're not getting them. I suspect that something will be done within that 6-week time frame to make sure that they do get the doses they need. But in the meantime, they say they are planning to reschedule for people within 7 to 10 days. And if you call their number, 844-987-6115, they don't have appointments right now, but they're suggesting that people just call every day and figure out to try and figure out a rescheduling their appointment, and that they'll be scheduling those as soon as they have appointments available, and that they're prioritizing people who need second doses.
All right. I hope that helps, Cindy, Carol. And again, that number is 844-987-6155. Is that right?
6115.
Oh, 115. Okay. Thank you. 844-987-6115. We have a similar email from Jean who says, my husband and I are Kaiser patients in San Francisco, got our first injection last month at Kaiser's vaccine facility at USF. We're scheduled to return for the second shot March 17th. Even though Sutter has taken over, we've not received any information from Kaiser regarding a change in the schedule. So does this, do you have any answers for Jean?
I don't know that specific situation. I do think it's good to be proactive. I have heard of some Sutter patients who weren't contacted that their appointment had been canceled. It when they logged onto the website, they found that out. I know other Sutter patients were contacted to, you know, be told that their appointments had been canceled. So in this case, unfortunately, I don't think one should assume that everything's, you know, continuing as planned unless you've reached out and tried to find that out.
You know, but
it's not every Sutter patient, just so we're clear, that's having their appointments canceled. So it doesn't necessarily mean.
We are actually getting a lot of emails though from Sutter patients who are getting their appointments canceled and they're concerned. What do we know about the time frame? So for example, if you cannot get your second shot until, you know, 6-8 weeks after, is it still as effective? Do we know yet?
No. So the reason that we're doing the schedule in the way we are, you know, the 4 weeks for Moderna and 3 weeks for Pfizer, is because that's how the trials were done. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's an enormous problem if it were to take longer than that. But the research that we have is on that vaccine schedule. And so that's why they're trying to really have providers stick to it. You know, there are other countries that decided to do this approach of, including the UK, of vaccinating as many people as possible with one dose and delaying the second dose. So I think that the experts would say, you know, we want to stick to the schedule that we have the data for, but there's good reason to believe that you're still very protected, even if it were to be delayed longer than that.
Starting March 15th, California will open up eligibility to anyone under 65 who has a disability or a qualifying health condition and anyone who is pregnant. And you can find information about that at covid19.ca.gov/vaccines. So this is right around the corner. Anna Maria, what can you tell us about how the state, what the state is doing to ensure that this rollout will go smoothly?
Yeah, well, let me tell you about something a little bit related first, which is that yes, last night and this morning, the state announced that they are going to change the way that they're giving out vaccines, and they're going to prioritize this. They use this system called the Healthy Places Index, which basically puts together a bunch of metrics and tries to look at the communities that are most disadvantaged, have highest rates of various diseases, kind of most unhealthy, and most underserved. And they are going to be giving a larger share of the vaccines to the bottom 25% of counties that sort of lowest performing in those metrics. And so the reason that's important to your question is that it's going to change a little bit the availability of vaccine by place. What the state said is that everywhere should see an increase in vaccine supply compared to where they are now going forward. But some of these communities that have been underserved so far are going to see a greater increase in the vaccine supply. That might mean that there's variation in how many appointments are available. So for people with chronic conditions who are going to be, it's going to be opening up to them at a time when there's a lot of competition. I hate to use that word, but a lot of competition for these very few vaccine slots. So I think that one could expect a little bit of frustration, and that, like has happened so far, those who are more internet savvy or have people who can help them will be better positioned to get an appointment. And one thing I found is that if you can, you know, pair up with somebody who really has a good capability of using the internet, understands all its quirks, that will help people get an appointment.
And I just, we only have about 30 seconds, but Kendall sent this email early and I want to make sure we get it in. Kendall writes, I live in Richmond and have an autoimmune disease. I'd like to get an mRNA vaccine, which appears to be better delivery system for those with autoimmunity rather than J&J. Is there a location where I can choose the vaccine I get?
Generally speaking, no, but that's probably an interesting thing to take up with your physician, and that they might be able to prioritize that. And Richmond, interestingly, is one of the communities I think that's supposed to get a greater increase in doses. So that might be something to talk with their provider about.
Okay. And then one more, and we're almost out of time, but we're getting through every single question. Sandy writes, how safe am I 1 week after my second Pfizer shot?
1 week after your second Pfizer shot. Well, I think it's two, if I remember correctly, it's 2 weeks after that they say you're fully vaccinated. But, you know, there's a lot of protection even after the first.
All right. Anna Maria, you're amazing. We answered all of the questions. Thank you so much for your work. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose. Take care.
Anna Maria Berry-Jester is a senior correspondent with Kaiser Health News. Thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.